Episode 53. This is the second annual tribute to 9/11. My guest is David Schreiner Kahn, and he'll be speaking about his firsthand accounts of the events of the day in New York City. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We're sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos and remain steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Windcaller. Welcome to the show. David Schreiner Kahn is president of 10 Strategic Partners in New York City, and he's the host of the business podcast, Smashing the Plateau, which features leaders helping leaders break through barriers. Welcome to the Leading Chaos Podcast, David.
Thank you, Rhea. It's great to be on.
I'm so happy to have this opportunity to speak to you on a topic that has touched so many of us throughout the world. And I know that you were in New York City on the morning of September 11th. And could you provide me with and the listeners a bit of a snapshot of your work site on that morning, as you recall?
Sure. I'm actually going to start before I get to the work site, which is, I went to work the way I did pretty much every weekday in 2001. I left home probably around 7 in the morning with my daughter, who was 16 at the time, and we rode the subway together. She said to me as we were on the train, do you think back to what technology was like in 2001? She said, I think I should have a cell phone. And I said, yeah, maybe that's a good idea. So then I got to work. My office at that point was on the 11th floor of a pretty massive building, a full square block in New York City, which is a large floor plate. On 15th Street between 8th Avenue and 9th Avenue. And my office was, as I said, was on the 11th floor. I had a office, which in New York City is prime real estate, and it faced south. And that neighborhood actually is mostly low-rise buildings, particularly south of my building.
Right.
So I had an unobstructed view of Lower Manhattan from where I was.
This area of New York City that David is speaking of is where the World Trade Center is located. And earlier that same morning, at 7:46 a.m., American Airlines flight number 11 had just left Logan International Airport in Boston, Massachusetts. That plane was bound for Los Angeles with 92 people on board. David continues on with telling us about his arrival at his office.
Well, I arrived in my office probably around 8 o'clock, and I was generally one of the earlier ones into the office, so the office was pretty quiet. The weather was a gorgeous day, crystal clear, typical like early to mid-September New York morning where it was cool, but promised to be warm by the afternoon. The day before actually had been kind of crummy weather, and it was there were a lot of clouds, and I remember that it looked really nice. We also had, because it was the beginning of the fall, we had student interns who worked in our office. We had a new intern who was due in at 9 o'clock, who had just moved to New York from California, and she was starting school and working for us part time. And it seemed like a pretty normal day.
Between 8:14 a.m. and 8:42 a.m., three flights took off from the East Coast headed to California. United Airlines flight number 175 was out of Boston with 65 passengers on board. American Airlines flight number 77 left Washington Dulles International Airport with 62 people on board. And United Airlines flight number 93 departed from Newark International Airport with 44 people. Right around 8:45 a.m., David and thousands of other New Yorkers realized that this is no ordinary day.
This building, office building, was a building that had pretty pretty solid construction. Mm-hmm. You never felt anything in the building, and the building shook pretty violently, almost like there had been an earthquake. And I looked up from my desk, and I saw the fireball, and what looked like lots of shiny, shiny pieces falling out of the World Trade Center. So, you know, like broken glass. Given the fact that I guess I was about, I don't know, probably a mile and a half from ground zero.
So you probably didn't know that it was a fireball, but you didn't realize that it was a plane at that point.
No, I didn't realize it was a plane. Those of us who were in the office at that point all actually gathered in the office adjacent to mine, which had the same view, and there was a television in that room too, so we turned on the television, and people were trying to figure out what was going on. We were standing there watching the scene of the fire and the smoke. And, you know, within a few minutes, there was another plane that we could visibly see that went into the second tower.
Hmm. Can I just back you up a little bit? Now, you said everybody gathered into that adjoining office with the view.
Those of us who were in the windowed offices got up and started gathering people.
Mm-hmm.
Started talking to our colleagues. It wasn't our section of the floor. It was a pretty small suite.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I don't know, probably a couple dozen people at most in our section. And at that point, since it was still before business hours officially started, not everybody was there yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there you were with your team, your group, and seeing and witnessing that next plane go in. I imagine you're seeing this also on this at the same time on television.
Given what we were witnessing, it seemed to me that that it was reasonably certain that there were going to be thousands of people who were killed,
mm-hmm.
and that I would probably know some. The other thought is that my daughter was four blocks from ground zero.
Hmm. And I guess I'd like to just kind of jump to that. Was your daughter safe?
She was, but I didn't know it at the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, communication was a big issue.
Yeah.
That day.
Yeah. Can you speak a little bit more about that? I mean, you mentioned that kind of serendipitous moment where she said, you know, I'd like to have a cell phone. I'm sure she certainly has one now. But at that moment, you know, you're seeing this, you're witnessing it, and you're in with a room full of people. What happened with the communication there? Were people actually communicating, or was there like a bonding happening, or was that kind of general numbness happening for everyone? Like, oh my gosh, you know?
Yeah, there are two elements of the communication. One is what happens with the people that you're physically adjacent to,
mm-hmm.
where there is some bonding and there is and the communication works. Then there's the communication that is with people that you're not physically adjacent to. So, cell phones. The whole cell phone infrastructure was overwhelmed, so cell phones were totally useless on that day. Landlines were working for the most part, although not all, because they were pretty overwhelmed too. One of the communications that happened was I know that I did speak with my wife, who was at that point she was at school in the Bronx, which is northwest, the northwest part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine whose daughter also was at the same high school with my daughter called me, and he was trying to get through to the school to find out if the kids were safe, what the plan was, etc., and he was unable to get through. And he and I went back and forth a number of times by phone. And then about, I don't know, it must have been somewhere around 10 o'clock or so, we were a subtenant on the floor, and the primary tenant was a related organization, and the leadership of the primary tenant asked everybody to gather in the conference room.
Mm-hmm. And was that at a lower floor or the...
No, same floor.
Okay.
Same floor. So we had, you know, we had, I don't know, probably 100 plus people in the conference room. And it turned out that the CEO of that organization was out of the country. He was in Israel, which... it's kind of ironic because one often thinks of Israel and the Middle East as being a neighborhood where there are scary events going on. Mm-hmm. And here he was on the phone leading this this quickly gathered conference trying to calm people down.
So he was on, he was speaking from Israel. Wow, doing all that. How was that going?
The truth is, when you're in a situation like this, when you don't really know what happened or what is about to happen, you know, there's a lot of fear, and people don't really know what to do, mm-hmm. and they don't know what's going to come next. So we were told, I don't know, probably around maybe 10:30 or so, that we needed to evacuate. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, I think that there were a lot of evacuations going on at large buildings all over New York that day. Mm-hmm. Plus, there were people who were also just leaving because they were fearful and they wanted to get out and try to head home.
Mm-hmm. Now, had you contacted your daughter at this point? Still, is like
I had no way to contact her.
No way. So no. What? You know, I mean, there's certainly this is going on and you're told to evacuate, and yet you're outside of that close by perimeter of Ground Zero. What was your gut telling you to do?
You know, my gut was telling me actually, initially was telling me maybe I should walk downtown to see if I could find her. Or see if I could find out what was going on.
Did you walk towards town?
I walked downtown a few blocks, and actually my building was pretty close. It's just a few blocks from the Hudson River. So I walked towards the river where there was more of a view of Lower Manhattan. From ground level, it was not obstructed by buildings. Also, at that point, West Street, which was undergoing some construction, there were some pedestrian paths that were in the process of being constructed along the river, which now is a beautiful park. Provided a fairly easy pathway for people to walk. And what I discovered when I got to the river is that there were just hundreds, probably thousands of people walking uptown along the river. Mm. And no traffic on the street. The only traffic was there were emergency vehicles and that were headed downtown. Plus, there were other kinds of vehicles that I think were voluntarily going to help out if they could, you know. So as an example, they were FedEx trucks that were headed downtown, I guess, to be available for transportation.
Right. So you started walking towards the direction, and I'm guessing that you stopped and turned around. Could you speak about that?
So I stopped and I waited and I just watched who was walking uptown. And after, I don't know, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe less than half an hour, I started seeing some kids who were about the same age as my daughter.
Yeah, I imagine that wasn't easy seeing all those people in distress and in such a situation. It's just unfathomable to imagine that.
Well, you know, people were people of all ages were in distress.
Yeah.
And frightened.
Yeah.
And then I started asking some of the kids if they knew my daughter. And then one of them said yes.
Oh.
She was coming.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. So that was, were you able to wait there, or is that?
Yeah, no, I waited. I waited, and then miraculously, she appeared with a bunch of her friends. Which, when you think about, you know, New York is a huge city. Running into somebody in an unexpected location is pretty rare.
Yeah.
And when you can't communicate that that's what you really want to do, it's actually, it's quite remarkable.
Yeah. Meant to be, definitely meant to be.
I guess so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's just absolutely amazing. In that time, and I know that this could be so stressful to talk about even so many years later, I don't think that'll ever go away, but in that time, was there anything standing out for you with people? You know, a lot of times in a situation like this, everybody's almost in that same state of distress, but sometimes, as you mentioned, the FedEx drivers, like, driving in the opposite direction of everybody leaving. What was the sense, you know, or was there somebody or a particular person who really stood out, you know, who's standing on the side saying, go this way? Was that noticeable at all? People who were really standing and taking leadership roles?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that question, because whenever there's a situation like this one where there is chaos and it's unclear what has happened or what may happen, very frequently you'll find that there may be a small number of people who step up and say, this is what we should do. And turns out that my daughter Kayla is one of these people.
Ah. And what did that look like for Kayla?
There was a group of, I don't know, probably, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 kids and one other parent, a father who happened to work a block from the high school. And we all walked together for a long time, because we met probably around, I don't know, 10th Street, 12th Street, and there was no transportation, so the only way to get anywhere was to walk. And Kayla was figuring out who needed to go where and how they were going to get there and who was going to go with whom when the group needed to divide up.
Wow. So she was having some amazing foresight and organizing skills, right? At a moment of where most people are just kind of fleeing, sometimes almost aimlessly. It sounds like she really took some amazing direction there.
Yeah, what I've observed as someone who works with leaders is that having the quality to take charge in a tough situation and direct people and give some guidance and kind of know when to push and when to prod and when not to, even when you're unsure yourself. It's an amazing quality, and it's so important in being able to lead a group of people effectively.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Is there something that came out of this experience? Is there some silver lining that you noticed that has helped you in your work today?
Well, I think it, in many ways, cemented something that I have felt and believed for a long time, which is that we're all on this earth for a limited period of time. If you look at how long each one of us lives compared to the extent of human existence on this planet, we're like a blip on the radar. And I believe that we have a responsibility to make our imprint every day and to add value to the world every day. Mm-hmm. In part because we know when we were born, and we don't know when we'll die. All we know is that we will all die at some point. So we have some finite amount of time that is unknown to be able to make our mark. So we have a responsibility to work at it every day. And I believe that every day you get up and put 2 feet on the ground is a good day.
Yes. Well said.
This is, I think this is the first time I've been interviewed about this.
Really?
It's amazing how fresh in one's mind these events are. Now, here it is. It's 2015. So now it's, 14 years?
Yeah.
And there's certain elements of the day that, to me, seem like they just happened. Yet if you ask me what movie I saw last week, I probably wouldn't remember. So, you know, as an example, when I'm walking around Midtown or Lower Manhattan and I see a commercial plane fly overhead, which they didn't do for a long time after 9/11, but they do now. Every time I see it, I think, well, why would air traffic control allow a commercial plane to fly right over Manhattan? And I'm expecting to hear a huge crash.
Hmm.
This happens every time I see a plane.
Wow. Wow. Is there anything that you do for yourself to manage that feeling, or that you've been purposeful towards to manage that?
No, not really. You know, it's interesting. It turns out that I have a client that works with first responders, in particular the FDNY. And it was started right after 9/11 in response to one person's desire to help the firefighting community. And the people who were part of the FDNY on 9/11 and shortly thereafter certainly had a personal relationship with this disaster that is way more severe than mine. So I'm kind of reminded when I see the work that goes on in this organization, I'm reminded of the impact that it has for those who are close up and personally affected. And I wasn't personally physically affected. And surprisingly, didn't personally know many people who were killed or injured.
For listeners who don't know what you mean by FDNY, that's the fire department for New York City.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And the organization that I mentioned, the organization that I mentioned is called Friends of Firefighters, and they were started specifically to provide emotional support.
Great. of course, FDNY, and there's also the Port Authority was so intrinsic to that event, because that was really their job site, the World Trade Towers and the police department. So many people coming forward, and your daughter too. One of the little acts that we do, just organizing thoughts on a day that doesn't make sense, means so much, even though it seems like such a little task. Thank you so much for the work that you do helping business leaders, and thank you so much for talking about the day in one's life that changed so many, and to sharing your personal story. I really appreciate your time.
And Rhea, thank you for the work that you're doing with the Leading Chaos podcast. Chaos is all around us, and you can plan to deal with it as much as you like, but the trigger moment of what happens and how you act in that moment can make all the difference.
So that's right.
So your work is very helpful.
I'd like to thank David Schreiner Kahn once again for participating in the second annual tribute to 9/11. You can find more about his work at the leadingchaospodcast.com website. We'll have links to his Twitter feed and his business, which is called 10 Strategic Partners. You'll also see a link to his own podcast. He is the host of Smashing the Plateau, and I really recommend that you subscribe to it, because it's a wonderful podcast, whether you're in business or not. It's about problem solving, and he's speaking to amazing people. So do check that out. If you've been moved today by this podcast episode with David Schreiner Kahn and want to leave your own message, memorial, or dedication, just go to the Leading Chaos Podcast website. And there you'll find a little tab that says SpeakPipe, and you can leave a voice message or send me an email, and we'll make sure to read it online just for you, or to post it. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. As always, be kind, be safe, and let's all leave this world a better place. Ciao for now.